Welcome back to the Roundtable on WAMC. Gosh, it's a beautiful blue sky here near our downtown Albany studios. 13 minutes after 9 o'clock on a Wednesday. Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue. Yeah, it's the Roundtable panel today. And as we move along here this morning, you're invited to join in by emailing us at panel@wamc.org. Panel@wamc.org. You know, I would say try, and we say this over and over again, and I apologize if you're a regular listener, but if you're that new person who's thinking, oh gosh, I love this, in which case, I don't know, you're drinking early. But if you just keep your letters brief, don't include links, no abbreviations, one a day per customer, please. Panel@wamc.org. Now, the panel. And what a great panel we have today. We have a former New York State Senator here. He's now a SUNY New Paltz Communications Professor, Terry Gibson. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. It's great to be here. Somebody told me it was Bring Your Wife to Work Day.
Really?
So, yeah. So,
I didn't tell my wife that.
Yeah, I don't know. Where is your wife? Why didn't you bring her? Alan, where's your wife? Well, I brought my wife. She's here today.
Hello.
Hello.
You must be Michelle.
I am Michelle. It's a thrill to be here.
Yeah, Michelle is tough. She is really
In what way?
Tough.
She seems
well,
very
I
nice.
Well, I can tell you a little story. I was talking to Terry long years ago, and I said to him, how do you avoid being corrupt like all the other politicians? And Michelle said, he better not.
Wow. Well, she's already.
See, so she is Jiminy Cricket on his shoulder. Always let your conscience be your guide.
And she's already threatened to swear here on the show, so I was pretty impressed with that. Feel free, Michelle. We have an eight-second delay, so we're good to go. Mm-hmm. Also on the panel today, and she's not here yet, we're vamping a bit. Berkshire Eagle reporter Jen Smith will be arriving soon. She's running a little late. She's on the way in. And then there's Alan Shartok, WAMC's Alan Shartok. And you know, I got—oh, here comes Jen.
Jen.
Hello, Jen. Come on in. It's very informal.
Thank you.
This is Michelle.
Michelle, Jen, Michelle.
Okay, all right. Are we all sitting down now? Glad to have you back, Jen. And Alan is here. And, you know, on this day that we lay to rest one of the great cold warriors in George H.W. Bush, it's appropriate that Alan wears his Leonid Brezhnev hat. So, well done.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
What's with the hat?
Well, I love this hat. It's made out of rabbit. It does shed. It gets on your clothing no matter what you're wearing.
Yeah.
It's not good. And our wonderful Dina Salzman made me at my request, made a communist red star, which
yeah.
I put on the front of it. But then I was going to the dentist, and the dentist's receptionist is Russian, and I said, well, I might tick her off. So
well, you should put
Is
the,
that too much information?
Put the commie star back on when you go to the NPR meetings later in the year.
That'll yeah, they'll all say, Bruzza.
Once again, here, the email address is panel@wamc.org. Now, this is a shortened, not a shortened panel. We'll have a full panel today, but it is a shortened roundtable. We will have the state funeral for late President George H.W. Bush today. It'll be attended by former President Barack Obama, former President George W. Bush, Bill Clinton, Jimmy Carter will all be there. Last time they were together was at the Trump inauguration in 2017.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
What an interesting factoid you've come up with there.
Now, my question for the panel, and I'm sure, Jen Smith, you know this off the top of your head. At what point in our history did we have the most living ex-presidents? Anybody know?
Right now.
You think so?
Yeah.
Probably.
Why? Why would you say that?
Well, people are living longer now. You got a lot of old guys. You got Jimmy Carter. You've got, you know, you had the two Bushes. You had,
So I'll tell you what.
Glenn, Glenn.
We don't really have an actual concrete answer, but I bet one of our listeners does. You can always email us, panel@wamc.org. My question is, at what point did we have the most living presidents at one time?
What do you get if you get it right?
You get the home version of the round table. Yes.
What a prize.
Yes. Plenty of angst and discussion to go around. President Trump's former national security advisor provided so much information to the special counsel's Russia investigation that prosecutors say he shouldn't do any prison time. That's according to a court filing that describes Michael Flynn's cooperation as substantial. The filing by special counsel Robert Mueller provides those first details of Flynn's assistance in the Russia investigation. I guess he participated in some 19 interviews with prosecutors. Is this coming to a close? Is this Mueller investigation coming to a close?
No. You know, I stayed up late last night because CNN and MSNBC were teasing the fact that the Flynn sentencing recommendation was going to come out. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it was like, you know, and now we're going to have this guy on or that guy on. But it didn't happen. It was the most redacted thing I have ever seen in my life.
Yes,
it was just
it was.
One black line running through the entire thing, other than to know he really participated and helped out the special counsel. And that, of course, raises the question of how would you like to be George? How would you like to be the president of the United States right now? You wouldn't want to be George Bush today, but or senior. How would you like to be the what?
Nothing. Carry on.
How would you like to be the President Trump today? I mean, this is bad. Now, the only thing he's got going for him is that Rudy the Mask Giuliani announced this morning that the president had nothing to worry about because he had what are you laughing at? So because he had the ability to know if they had anything, and they don't have anything because he would know it otherwise, said Giuliani. America's mayor.
Yeah. I'm not sure that this president is really capable of even really understanding the predicament that his administration is in right now and how many people are out there testifying about the various things that have gone on behind the scenes, many of which appear to be illegal. I'm not sure he's capable of really processing that.
Yeah. Michelle, what do you think?
Oh, wow. You're right on, Michelle. Go ahead.
I was not prepared for this.
I'm not prepared, sir. Yeah.
He is just in a world of his own and is invincible in his mind.
In his mind, he's invincible. Yeah, yeah. And, of course, the world's best reporter from the Berkshire Eagle, we're going to hear from you.
Yeah, I think in this case, you know, Russia's not doing much, you know, to do one thing or another. I think though there is a public sentiment of wondering, you know, when I as a reporter get, you know, some insight or am hearing that we'll get some insight and then we get these heavily redacted documents. It's like, okay, what is really going on? What will we see anything happen by Friday? You know, anything more about Manafort.
Well, we expect that, a filing on Friday,
yes.
About Manafort.
Well, what makes you think you won't see one more big black lion going through the whole thing? I mean, you know, obviously this guy is taking his time. He's mm-hmm. being extremely prudent. We all know that the President of the United States has talked to his advisors about firing him, something I predicted would happen a long time ago because, you know, as I have often said, not calling him a rat, but mm-hmm. saying when you put a rat in a corner, mm-hmm. and he has nowhere to go, he'll bite you. And how many options do they really have now except to fire? He's put his new, insipid attorney general in over the whole operation. What makes you think they won't fire him?
Now, with all due respect, comrade,
are you sure you mean that?
Comrade Brezhnev, you have been saying that he'll have no choice but to fire Mueller for, what, a year and a half now?
Yeah.
And it hasn't happened.
That's, you know why it hasn't happened? Because they said it wasn't going to happen. No, the fact is that he's wanted to. We know he's wanted to, Ray. That's very disingenuous of you.
Thank
because,
you.
Because we know and we have heard from many people that he asked them. We know he asked his White House counsel and we asked other people and they said you can't do it because it will lead to your impeachment. But if on the one hand you have impeachment and on the other hand you have firing the guy or impeachment and maybe jail, what would you do? Mm.
Well, you know, one of the ways I look at this when we talk about how redacted this report was and there's so little information there for us to figure out what's going on, I think it's important to focus on what we do know. What we do know is that this president is a chronic liar and that everything that comes out of his mouth is a lie. And it's getting worse and worse and worse by the day. So what that does tell us is that Mueller has gone about a very strategic investigation where he's getting people to tell the truth. And we know by how many people he's interviewed, how many people he is giving leniency to, that he is getting a lot of truth that is someday going to come out and contradict all the lies that the president is telling.
Maybe, but you know, yesterday in talking to our wonderful congressman from the 2nd District of Massachusetts, Jim McGovern, I said, what will happen? Come on now. What will happen? Because he was talking about how they want to pass this piece of legislation to protect the prosecutor and Mueller. What would happen, if that didn't happen and if he did get fired, what should happen in the United States? He said everybody should grab their pots and pans and go out on the streets. Mm-hmm. I said, but that doesn't happen in this country. You would think, you know, Comey firing and all the rest of it and Hillary winning by 3 million votes. You'd think somebody would be out on the street with Kavanaugh. You'd think somebody would be out on the street. We don't go out on the streets.
Well, I don't know. I mean, we've had the Women's March. We've had a lot of other
marches.
Yeah,
one day we had a million people. I was there one day.
I saw you there.
Yeah. And then what happened?
I think we've had other large-scale protests like that. And I think the last election that we just had, in many ways, was people coming out with pots and pans and showing their disapproval. Well, we had a historic turnout in elections here. No, a lot of things happened.
Well, you're right that they came out, but it's hardly pots and pans, and it's hardly at that moment. So if he fires Mueller tomorrow, do you get pots and pans, or do you have people saying, well, we'll get him the next election in 2020?
Well, I think there are bigger issues, too. I mean, we can't lose sight of the fact that we're looking at something that happened almost 2 years ago now. But we really have to be wary of Russia's actions now. I mean, there's still evidence and anecdotes that Russia is still meddling, which is the heart of the issue, and I think has greater implications for long-term national security. Mm-hmm. And I think that's something that we have to keep watching now. I think one of the lesser talked about stories, but equally important stories right now, is what's happening with the nuclear negotiations that are happening in Russia right now. That's scary.
Putin said, you build some advanced missiles. Hey, we'll do the same.
Yeah, well,
there's
and
a
the
throwback
fact that,
to the 70s.
That there might not be a treaty, and that means less oversight of what's happening over there. We're less in the game. I think another dangerous issue that's happening right now is with Trump advocating and talking on his own through social media, largely through Twitter, that it's sort of giving Russia and others sort of fuel to use against the U.S. And to kind of get into his head game and his headspace. And, you know, who says another timeline or a set of alternative facts can't be developed to go along with that story as well? I think that's very dangerous.
Well, it's chaos right now. That is, the administration is leading through chaos. That is the way he's going about governing. And it's not just happening in Russia. It's happening with our relationship with China. It's happening with our relationship with North Korea. I mean, you just saw in the news the other day that in addition to the nuclear issues in Russia, the president is willing to go back and talk to North Korea, even though they have not kept up their end of the bargain on trying to eliminate their nuclear weapons. So it's chaos.
Roger Stone, meanwhile, another confidant of President Trump, says he won't provide documents to the Senate Judiciary Committee or testify, will invoke the Fifth against the right against self-incrimination. In a letter to Dianne Feinstein, a lawyer for Stone said the panel's requests for information about people with whom Stone has communicated in the last 3 years were far too overbroad, far too overreaching, and far too wide-ranging. So he's invoked the Fifth. It's understood by all to be an assertion of constitutional right by an innocent citizen who denounces secrecy, said his lawyer, Grant Smith.
One of the ironic parts in that story was where they reached back into some of Trump's comments previously, and he accused anyone of taking the Fifth to be a mobster, that only guilty people take the Fifth. And now, of course, Roger Stone is taking the Fifth.
He's going to sell a lot of books.
What do you mean?
That's kind of what Stone does, right? He's a mouth. He's the loudest person who's taking the fifth that there ever was. You know, I mean, he's written all his books on his positions and posturing, and I think, you know, that's what I think about.
But Jen, you know, the issue here, of course, is that you have a president of the United States who stood up time after time after time after time, and all of the major networks are showing them, pardon me, showing that this guy said anybody who takes the fifth is obviously trying to avoid the truth, and now his greatest defender is taking the fifth.
I mean,
that's what I think about that.
Well, I guess what this is all about is whether he had advanced knowledge of the Democratic emails that were made public,
right?
And so there apparently is a transcript of the session with the House Intelligence Committee that may soon be released, where they discuss this. So
right.
We'll see.
But I think if you look at, if again going back to the Mueller investigation, if there are plenty of other people who could say what Stone could say, so you know, I don't see it.
Yeah.
I don't know what else we could get out of him that someone else can't already account for.
I think you're right. I was thinking the same thing, that the Mueller investigation clearly now probably knows the answers to everything that Mr. Stone doesn't want to tell us. They probably already know the answer to it because they've talked to so many people. Mm-hmm. And he was clearly linked with all of those people. And I don't think anybody's going to buy another book by Roger Stone. I think his day is done.
Oh, I don't know. Yeah. You'd be surprised. Terry Gibson is here. Jen Smith, Alan Shartok, and of course, Michelle is here. Well done today so far. Good
job.
Thank you. So far, so good.
The email address is panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org, and we'll try to get to some of your letters coming up. Once again, if you're new to the program, keep the letters brief. Give us one good thought. No links, no abbreviations. Proofread if you can. One a day per customer, panel@wamc.org. Lots more roundtable ahead. We'll take a break. It's Albany Pro Musica presenting the Many Moods of Christmas. Christmas around the world, Troy Savings Bank Music Hall, Sunday, December 9th at 3 p.m. That's this Sunday, albanypromusica.org. It's the Roundtable on WAMC 934.
Isn't Rex in the Albany Pro Musica?
He might be. Rex Smith? Radio's Rex Smith?
Yeah, Radio's Rex Smith.
I do not know. We'll find out. Yeah. I think so. He was at one time.
Yeah, I think he still is.
Right. Now I'm going to do the rejoin. Just hang on just a sec. This
please.
Is the Roundtable. It's 9:34 on a Wednesday morning. Ray's in for Joe. It's the Roundtable panel. Terry Gibson is here.
That's called a rejoin?
Can I get
you
through?
You want to come back? Oh, yeah. All right.
Okay. Just stand by, and I'll tell you what it is. Terry Gibson is here, a former New York State Senator, SUNY New Paltz Communications Professor. Also, Berkshire Eagle reporter Jen Smith and WAMC's Alan Shartok. Yeah, and the rejoin, you come back after a segment. You say, hey, this is what it is. Welcome to the show. We're coming back now.
I didn't know what a rejoin was. I thought it maybe had something to do with Leona Bobbitt or something like that. So
thank you. The email address is panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org.
And hashtag no filter, Alan.
Hashtag I just got a pain.
Where's that dump button?
You know what? You make a great point, Terry Gibson. I think I was flummoxed by that. We do have some emails. Go ahead there, Alan. Try to keep it clean.
All right. Michael says, 6 living presidents, 4 times.
Aha.
Thank you.
Said. Thank you very much for that.
Yep. We need good fact checkers in the world.
Especially on this show.
And then John from Woodstock said, we know one thing with dead certainty about the Mueller investigation. All of Trump's key aides in the White House are lying about what they know. That begs the bigger question. What are they trying to hide? Because it is clear that they do not want the truth to see the light of day, and that's John from Woodstock. Well, you know, every time you say something like all, there must be one who doesn't lie, right? I mean, you have to be careful about those
blanket statements.
Yeah, that all. Because you could say most. That's what I'm thinking. And Joan says, it is uncivil to mention Iran-Contra at this time. Hi, I'm a regular listener and appreciate how the panel bravely wades out into controversial waters. There is much to admire about the late President George Herbert Bush. However, at this time in history, I believe it is important to remember and learn from history, particularly how, as VP under Reagan, Bush was privy to the clandestine and illegal arms for hostages deal with Iran that not only cost Jimmy Carter re-election armed with the Revolutionary Guard in Iran, but further destabled Central America. Then, as president, Bush pardoned all involved, thereby absolving himself and others of any consequences for criminal behavior. Can we talk about it? Maybe not today. Okay, so Joan wrote that letter, and we just talked about it because we read Joan's letter. But she does raise something that we've talked about many times here, which is, does everybody get a free pass on the way out? In other words, is it just wrong to remember somebody, even a major historical figure, in terms of some of the things that they have done? Now, we have, over the last several days, read some critical letters. And we have been beaten up horribly for having done that. Saying it's not right, and no matter how, you know, how good or bad somebody is, you should not do that on the way out. So I just thought I'd mention that again.
Well, I really enjoyed that letter, and I appreciate her writing it. And I do think that historical accuracy is very important. I think that it's also important that we pay respect to former leaders of our country and understand that the loss that their family and friends are suffering.
Are you still running for office again?
No, but I do think I think this the death of this president has been very interesting to see how the media has covered it and how the public has responded. And I think a lot of things have come out that we knew about at the time. They're not secrets, but, you know, talking about the way that he was in real denial about the AIDS crisis, for instance, Iran-Contra's another. No president is perfect. No elected official is perfect. And I think if we're going to write history, it's important that we write it correctly and we take the good with the bad. And this president was no different than the others in that he had good and he had bad. He was a nice guy. He tried his best. But there were things that were not done in such a way that I think a lot of people would have preferred they be done. The AIDS crisis in particular was one that I remember. And I also remember on this topic going back to when Nixon passed away. If you remember that whole ceremony and what went on with that and how he was treated just like any other president, even though he had been impeached, that was very controversial.
He had not been impeached. Oh, well, yeah. Well, he had not been impeached.
He was about to be impeached, right. And that was another chance where a lot of people were saying great, great, great things about this president, and people were very frustrated with the fact that the truth wasn't really being told about some of the awful things he had done.
Yeah, it's true. Somebody told me, is this true that Roger Stone has Nixon's name tattooed on his back? Has anybody else heard of that?
Roger Stone. Anybody seen Roger Stone's back?
No.
Anybody?
Yeah. Well, not me.
I'm happy not to know the answer.
I don't. Yeah. Yes. Yes. Good answer.
Karen says, chess. I recall a quote from Henry Kissinger about how he would not play chess with other world leaders as it would give them all too much information about his strategy.
Interesting.
Now we have Trump tweeting out his game plan. Can you please comment?
I think what I was kind of getting at earlier is that it's very dangerous, when you have this president kind of saying, going on these within the tantrums, there is important insight into the inner workings
maybe,
of his mind.
Maybe, but if you were to take as written that these are the ravings of a madman, and I'm not saying that's true, but a lot of people believe that that's true, then this doesn't really give you much insight because it changes from day to day.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that's the whole point. I mean, here's a president who believes, and he tells us he believes it, that he is as good as anybody and that he trusts his instincts. And when he was in the real estate business, this is the way he behaved, right?
But I think you can still draw, going back to the chess anecdote, is those character inferences, and you know how to play him by using your language and finding ways to appeal or press his buttons. I think I think any given American can guess that, you know, now just by the basis of what he's revealed and
the way he deals
with people.
It has changed the paradigm for all future chief executives, however, because now this is another arsenal in information, disinformation, misinformation. Mm-hmm. There will be careful strategies about social media use now.
Yeah. I don't think you can take anything that he tweets as fact. I mean, I would never base a report on it per se. I might use a quote. But at the end of the day, like, I think you can still, you know, again, judge that character and judge, you know, get an insight of what he's leaning to.
If you talk to any communications professor like myself and, mm-hmm. and others and that have been around for a long time, well before me, they'll tell you that everything that they teach in their communication classes is about what not to do in terms of what Donald Trump is doing. We have these things called whether or not you are competent in communication competence. And he breaks every single one of those rules. We have this thing called emotional intelligence in communication, and Donald Trump breaks every one of those rules. There are textbooks written on communication competence, and somebody should buy one for this president
and teach him
how to be a communicator.
Wait. You know, I'm no fan, as everybody knows, of this president. On the other hand, I want to point out something to you, Terry. He's president. He's got to be president somehow. So he had a skill set that allowed him, using whatever communication tools he had, to do that. What do you think, Michelle, about that? Michelle is Terry's wife, for those of you who...
Oh, yes, for the rejoin purposes.
Yeah, right.
Yes, just to rejoin for a second. all I know is going back to what Jen's been saying. Not all I know. I do know more, but I'm so nervous. Loose lips sink ships. Mm-hmm. And this president, I don't know if any other before, have put us in such harm as he has with the words that come out of his
That's
mouth.
That's true. And yet, there are many people who think and keep saying that he has a pretty good chance of being reelected. Isn't that horrible?
That's a long way away.
It's horrible.
Well, it is. I said yesterday there's no way that's going to happen. But there are people like Bruce Springsteen who believe that it's possible, well, and not more than possible.
I don't think it's possible because I think, to the point you mentioned before, there are the communication skills that you use to get elected and the skills that you use to get elected on a campaign trail are very different than the communication skills that you need to actually govern and be effective. And they're not translating well for this president. We need to see him use communication skills that are appropriate and will actually allow advances that are positive for everyone in the country. And right now, that's not happening. Nothing
so you're not all
done.
That enthused with the way he's carrying out the social media campaign?
No.
Can I infer that?
I think it's ineffective. I think it's damaging to our economy, which I know we're going to talk
about
here
shortly.
Well, that's
so interesting. You know, Jen talks about how to read into the president's mind with the tweets. Now, I wonder, does anybody actually believe what is being tweeted on a daily basis? For instance, yesterday, he's upbeat. Xi Jinping and Trump say, okay, there's a three-month hold. And then, apparently, no one believes it because the stocks go down. The Dow goes down
800 points.
Yeah, 700 points. Does anybody believe it?
Well, and I think that's the thing is that because the timeline doesn't match of what he said about negotiating agreement. So I think people, because they don't have anything reliable to base their decisions on, I think the danger to the market is that it's going to create a lot of sort of gambles in terms
think,
of how
think
to play.
700 points?
Yeah. And I think it's going to, you know, people are going to look at their emotions or try to interpret, you know, what's going to happen. And I think, you know, do you look to GM as an example and say, like, you know, yes, there's an impending economic downturn, and do we start voting that way and consolidating?
We'll take a quick break here. We have to break for, and then we'll get back to the letters.
Okay,
Jen Smith is here.
I have some more.
I see that. Terry Gibson is here. Michelle is here. Alan Chartok is here. You are there. Panel at WAMC.org.
You are there.
We'll be right back. Welcome Welcome back to the Roundtable on WAMC. It's Wednesday morning, 9:47 is the time. Ray is in for Joe, Terry Gibson, Jen Smith, Alan Shartok on the panel. You at home joining in on the home version of the Roundtable by emailing us at panel@wamc.org. We have more letters.
Well, we have one extraordinary letter.
Oh, boy.
When I tell you extraordinary, I mean extraordinary. We have heard from Rex Smith.
Oh, no.
Now, it's either Rex Smith, you know, the washed-up singer from back in the day.
Right.
Or it's Rex Smith, you know, the editor of
who
the
is
Times
also a
Union.
Singer, but not washed up.
No, he's with Albany Pro Musica, I believe,
right.
Yes.
Okay, and what does Rex say?
He says, it is true, Stone Nixon tattoo.
Oh.
Ah.
Well,
and
good.
If he says it, it's so. Okay. Let me tell you that right
how
now.
Know? How does he know?
Well,
someone's watching Stone's back, apparently.
I read it, too.
Thanks, Rexy.
Well, there was a great folk song in the 1960s called It Must Be True, I Read It in the Daily News.
Right. I mean, what about I Swear by My Tattoo, right? A Whale of a Tale to Tell You Lads? You don't remember that one?
No. I missed that one.
That's right. It's Pete Seeger didn't write it. All right, next.
It's a multi-generational panel, folks. Yeah,
it is. And Barb writes, Stone, it's actually a tattoo of Nixon's face. Barbara from New York.
Oh, I'll be darned. Okay.
Well, I'll be darned.
The news is leaking out. Slowly but surely.
And then we heard from Martina Dignan. I'm not supposed
That's
to
fine.
Read the first name. Yeah,
right,
I don't know.
Well,
that was maybe another one. As Ray always says, yes. Pompeo and Mattis. What do you think about their comments referring to the mayor of Khashoggi's murder? And that's from Martina.
Hmm.
Well, you know.
That's interesting. In fact, that's a good segue into the next segment.
Okay, you want to do it? You want
Democratic
to
say leaders
it?
Say CIA Director Gina Haspel should give the full Senate the same briefing they received on the death of Saudi journalist Jamal Khashoggi. Haspel gave a classified briefing to a small bipartisan group of senators Tuesday. The senators who attended said it left them even more convinced that Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman was involved in the death. Dick Durbin of Illinois, Democratic senator, said every senator should hear what I heard this afternoon. Rand Paul called excluding senators from the briefing, quote, the definition of the deep state.
Well, you know, it's so interesting because when these briefings occur, you don't always get the kind of vigorous, vociferous reaction that you had from the Republican senators yesterday. They weren't fooling around. They basically told you what she said. It was supposed to be, you know, it was supposed to be not a public hearing and all the rest, although they were supposed to let it all out afterwards. But it was clear that they were saying that she said that the prince had been in charge of the murders.
Lindsey Graham had the greatest line out of this whole article, which was, it's not a smoking gun, it's a smoking saw,
yeah.
Which just gives you some idea of what they must have heard during that hearing.
And he said, Senator Graham says he'll push the Senate to vote on a resolution that finds Mohammed bin Salman complicit in the murder. And I just wonder, is this a moment now in our history after 10, 12 years of real preeminent executive power that the legislative branch now reasserts itself?
Who wants to go first? Because I certainly have some ideas about that.
Go ahead.
Well, you know.
Well played, Mr. Gibson. Smart answer. Yes, go ahead, Alan.
Well, no. It is so clear that this one is so over the top that they're willing to gain some respectability back by doing it. On the other hand, when it comes to something like a Supreme Court nomination or the rest, they're not gonna fool around. They're not gonna step over the line. That's why a lot of people are saying, "Isn't Lindsey Graham wonderful?" The answer is no. All you had to do is remember him screaming when we went through that last nomination process. So. You know, it gives them, they're always looking for a way to grab just a little respectability without ticking off the potential primary voters, which would mean the end of their careers.
Well, I think it's like they also can't get upstaged by Turkey. I mean, you have Turkey moving sure. forward on prosecuting some of the players involved, which were, you know, higher ups to MSB and or MBS rather. And, you know, I think if they don't do anything, it just doesn't look well for diplomacy on the world stage and leadership on the world stage. You know, I think I'm still personally bothered by the fact that we're also not putting down other sanctions. And well, I know why, but against, you know, what's been going on in Yemen and this 3-year war. Not only are they facing starvation, thousands of children and families, innocents, who have nothing to do with this political war, are now facing a cholera outbreak over there. And we know what that did to Haiti, and we know what that can do to an already devastated population. And no one's stepping up.
Well, we need someone at the federal government to get serious about governing and representing our country both nationally and globally. And if the president isn't going to do it or isn't capable of doing it, and I believe he's not capable of doing it, then it will fall to the legislative branch to do what they can to try to guide the executive branch in a certain direction so that we have some type of leadership position in this country and in the world. And if they can do that, then I commend them. I do think that Republicans still will not hesitate to put conservative judges on the court. They'll continue to deregulate the environmental regulatory authority so that it makes it easier for corporations to pollute. I think they have no trouble doing that. But I think if they can hold this president to some degree accountable for his actions globally, that would be a good thing.
I think the danger is it's easy for them to make statements saying like it's bad to kill someone. But I think the problem is that, you know, again, looking at these midterm elections, where did these millions of dollars come from? And when we're dealing with negotiations, I mean, a lot of the U.S. has stake in Saudi territory and money and transactions. And I think that's going to constantly prohibit this Congress from taking any real hard line actions on any negotiations we have over there.
It's the roundtable panel on WAMC. The email address here is panel@wamc.org. If you want to drop a quick note our way, panel@wamc.org. Terry Gibson is here. Jen Smith is here. Alan Shartok. The Wisconsin Senate voted just before sunrise, following an all-night session, to pass a sweeping bill in a lame duck session designed to empower the GOP-controlled legislature and weaken the Democrat, replacing Republican Governor Scott Walker, Democratic Governor-elect Tony Evers, and Democratic Attorney General John Call are incoming. And this was quite a session. And I know, Alan, you're a noted expert on Wisconsin, owing to your seminal book, Strengthening the Wisconsin Legislature, which was a huge seller back in the day.
It really was. And if you go over to one of the
online
things, you can get a copy of it for $1.50, maybe $1.25.
True story. He gave me a copy once signed. And it had been signed to someone else who I guess gave it back. And then Alan gave it to me. But then Alan asked for it back. So I had to give it back.
And the truth of the matter is that Wisconsin politics have always been wicked for a number of reasons. On the right-hand side, you get as reactionary a group of Republicans as you will find anywhere. And on the left, quite frequently, you get very progressive Democrats. Not always, but very progressive Democrats. And they duke it out. They really do. This is not something that is reserved to Wisconsin right now. As you know, for years the Republicans were taking over legislatures, and that allowed them to gerrymander because of the legislatures and to do all of that. So this is not reserved here because there's a lot at stake, and so in grave panic they're doing everything they can. And by the way, it isn't reserved to state legislatures; they're doing it in the United States House of Representatives right now. They're trying like crazy to get as much right-wing stuff done before the Democrats take over.
Yeah, I don't actually find it that surprising if you follow politics in state governments as closely as I guess some of us do. These kinds of things are happening. I think what's surprising is that the public is now rising up and speaking out against it, when the truth of the matter is that the Republicans in Wisconsin and other states have been doing things like this all year long for the last 2, 3, 5, 10 years.
Including
just start doing it last week.
Voter suppression, right. Things of that kind.
Yeah. Sure. And maybe if the public had risen up and paid more attention 5 or 10 years ago, maybe we wouldn't be in the position we're in today. But better late than never.
But as long as you say that, Terry, once again, how outrageous that as you elect a new governor, because clearly you said before, you know, people have the power of the ballot box. As you elect a new governor and he's coming in, you do everything in your power in the most undemocratic way make sure that he doesn't and he's not able to get anything done.
Well, I don't know if it's undemocratic. They do have the democratic power to do what they're doing. They were elected. They're still in office. They have the authority, as long as they follow the legislative rules, to do this. That doesn't mean I agree with it. It doesn't mean that they should do it, but I think it's very democratic.
Wisconsin Assembly Speaker Robin Vos countered that the bills will ensure a balance of power between the legislature and executive branch. Quote, we have allowed far too much authority to flow to the executive. To you, this
when did they discover that? Yesterday?
Now, I guess that's the question. But he said, to you, this is all about politics. To me, it's about the institution.
I recommend strengthening the Wisconsin legislature by me. And I'll sign it if you get a copy and send it over to me.
But it'll be signed thrice before that.
So you can get some mileage out of that $1.50.
It's all there.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
I was going to ask our expert a question here.
Oh, yeah, please do. Now, which one is that?
Well, there's only one.
Oh, okay. Brezhnev. Your starter's for 10. Go ahead.
So how would you compare the New York State legislature to the Wisconsin legislature?
Well, when I was there, which was a real long time ago, I don't really know what's going on now. But I can tell you that the big difference was that the New York State legislature, the staffing pattern was huge, as opposed to Wisconsin, where they would come in the room, the senators, on every committee, on every bill. They would roll up their sleeves and they would do the work. It was extraordinary. You just didn't see the same kind of staffing in Wisconsin then. Now, I'm assuming things have gotten different now.
One of the things that took place in this bill, and I know we have to break for news, it would also limit early voting to no more than 2 weeks before an election.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe some federal judge said that was unconstitutional.
Well, and that's what I wonder with some of these bills is, you know, what's actually going to fly in court and what will make it through the strainer and what will be stuck.
I love that.
It's never underestimate the power and importance of the judicial branch of our government. It is the checks and balances that we count on for when legislative laws are passed that are unconstitutional. And this is why the judges that are appointed by the people that we elect really do matter, because they ultimately determine whether or not the laws that are passed are constitutional.
Terry Gibson is here. He's a former New York State Senator, now SUNY New Paltz Communications Professor. Berkshire Eagle reporter Jen Smith is here. WAMC's Alan Shartok is here. Michelle Gibson is here. And you know what? You've been hogging the conversation. I got to be honest with you. We have to take a break here for news and just calm down and try to get you to some balance here. It's the Roundtable Panel, and we'll be back. Welcome back to the Roundtable on WAMC. It's 10:05, almost 10:06 now, Wednesday morning. Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue. It's the Roundtable Panel, the waning one-third of the program. Terry Gibson is here, Jen Smith, Alan Shartok, and you at panel@wamc.org. And before Alan reads more letters, I just want to thank the listener who sent us all the picture of Roger Stone's Nixon tattoo.
On his back.
We didn't really need to see it, but thank you all the same.
There it was.
Yeah.
And it was. Mm-hmm. Okay, so Arthur writes us, Trump smart? I disagree with Alan that Trump is smart. Rather, he has a psychological pathology that resonates with all too many people. He is good at it because he is reflective rather than thoughtful. Okay, Arthur, I'm not going to fight with you except to tell you I've never really thought the man was smart, but I think he is devilishly good at getting elected and doing that. And I don't disagree with your assessment of what's really going on there. My name, by the way, Arthur, is spelled with one L. Please don't do that again. And you know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Believe me.
Okay.
After 21 years, I know what you mean.
Perception, says Kenneth. the positive commentary regarding George H.W. Bush is really a longing for normal politics as opposed to today's toxic, untruthful atmosphere. The former president was a mixture of good and bad, but today's president makes everyone else look better. By the way, that could not be more true. Everybody looks better.
NPR was very glowing today, this morning, during Morning Edition.
Did notice that.
About HW. Yeah. But, yeah.
The email address here is panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org, if you want to write us a letter. We talked about Roger Stone and WikiLeaks and the Democratic emails that were hacked. Yesterday, it was discovered or announced that thousands of emails were stolen from aides to the National Republican Congressional Committee during the 2018 midterm campaign, a major breach exposing vulnerabilities that have been keeping security experts on edge since the 2016 presidential race. The email accounts were compromised during a series of intrusions that had been spread over several months and discovered in April. A person with the familiarity of the case told the Associated Press at least four different party aides had their emails surveilled by hackers. The committee said an unknown entity was behind the hack, but provided few other details. A cybersecurity firm and the FBI have been investigating it. No immediate suspects, few technical details, so it's unclear to know the significance of what happened. Terry Gibson.
It's interesting that they've managed to keep this secret, since like April, I guess?
Yeah.
How much criticism has been connected with the hacking of the Democratic Party's email system. It's ironic now that we find out that similar things have been happening with both parties. I think more importantly, it just points to the real need for greater security in our cyberspace here in this country. Our political systems are being hacked. Our corporations are being hacked. And again, you wonder if this president and even this Congress is capable of stepping up and then taking steps to protect our information.
Yeah, I couldn't help but quip to myself as hearing unknown entity. It makes it sound very paranormal, this situation.
Yeah,
but,
like the X-Files?
Yeah,
I don't think
the
so.
The truth is out there, folks. I think I agree with Terry in terms of, the real issues with cybersecurity is definitely a big thing. I'm curious what information, if they find any information was particularly hacked or targeted, I'd be curious to see what the analytics are in that. Like who was that? That's information I don't entirely know all too well. What can be done with this information? I think the general public knows what can happen when your personal information is hacked, whether you're a Facebook account owner, have a Equifax login. There's a lot of data that can be breached, and that we don't really have a lot of policies or progress in shoring up our defenses there.
And we never will. I mean, yeah. The hackers are usually a step ahead of every defense that we have. Once we went to electronic conversations, including radio back in the day, they were listened in on, and now email. Terry Gibson, when you were in the New York State Senate, was there ever, and you were in the internet and email age, was there ever something so sensitive that you said, God, this is not going in the email, this is going either face-to-face or in a little note?
Nothing that I can recall. I mean, you are cognizant of how you're communicating and what you're communicating about. I think the level of magnitude in a state legislature versus the federal government is substantially different.
Oh, I understand that.
We've seen situations with various elected officials here in this state find themselves in courtrooms because of things that they've communicated through email. So that's not unusual. We've seen recently several people in the lobbying industry go to prison in New York State because of things that were communicated in email. So it is important. The thing that concerns me more at the federal level about the hacking, in the corporate world, we're worried about losing our Social Security numbers and our credit card numbers, which is terrifying. But in the political world, I think what we have to be worried about is if a foreign entity has garnered information from either a Republican or a Democratic elected official that's in a position of authority, can they use that information to blackmail that individual and actually influence how they go about operating as an elected official in this country. That, to me, is very terrifying because you're talking about manipulating our government system by using the very people whose information you've hacked as puppets.
I mean, that goes back. It doesn't matter what medium is involved. That goes back. And it's also not just blackmail. It's knowing the next step knowing what in the next negotiation, what are they really after?
Yeah, I mean, I think it goes way back in our history. But I mean, there's obviously ways to get information long before email and the digital age. But
it's easier now, huh?
The digital age has made it easier because you can do it remotely from your living room in Russia or China or wherever you are, versus having to get on a boat or a plane and fly over and spy on someone.
This weekend, Defense Secretary Jim Mattis accused Russia of trying to muck around in the November midterms. Mattis didn't offer specifics. He would not elaborate. This is now just the new normal.
Yeah, it does seem to be the new normal. I think that's what is terrifying all of us about all of these new stories is that it's becoming normal. You know, I was just thinking the other day as I was in one of my classes looking at my students who are all in the age of, 19, 20, 21. If you're of that generation, this is normal to you. This what you're experiencing now in government is more normal than anything you can really compare because it's what you're really engaging with now. And to us who have been around a while, this is very, very unnormal what we're dealing with in politics today. But to those who are in their 19, 20-year-olds, it's just completely normal. And that isn't good.
Well, yeah, I think it's a matter of, should you accept that? And I there's something that really makes me cringe every time I hear the new normal and, this is just the way it is. And I don't like it. Yeah. And I think that,
What do you do about it, though?
Well, and I think that's the big question we're all coping with, right? What do you do if you're a person who's just at home trying to live life? What do you do if you're one of the newly elected officials who are about to step office? What do you do with that power? What do you do with your voice? Maybe it is just repeatedly saying, no, we're not going to accept this. No, this is not right. And keep building that clamor. Is there another way to change that? I think that's something you have to sit down and really absorb. I think, coming from a state in Massachusetts where we finally just adopted a mandated civics law, I mean, it's something that I wasn't really taught. I was taught about history, but I was never taught really how to engage in civics. One of the best classes I have, shout out to Mr. Tierney in high school, but he made us go to local government as part of our government, U.S. government class, and it was one of the best lessons I ever had. It got me involved in not student council, but actually school council, which helped create school policy as a young person, as a high school student. I've used those skills through the rest of my life, but I think a lot of our young people, I just spent the past week with a lot of high school students from around New England, and a lot of them, very few are getting that chance to engage, but many say they want to be engaged. I was sitting at the Basketball Hall of Fame last week. There was a Massachusetts Equity Summit, and two students from Springfield Technical Community College had a chance to share their stories and struggles throughout their educational lives. And that was their advice to the audience, was to say, listen to us, ask us to be involved. And I think we can't take that for granted.
Yeah, we were talking about sort of normal, new normal, and I was just looking at the screen, looking at H.W. Bush's funeral beginning. And to me, that what is happening today, regardless of how you feel about H.W. Bush, is the passing of what I think was the last presidential administration that I would consider to be really normal. You didn't agree with everything they did. There were a lot of things he did that I didn't like. But there was a normalcy to it in that you felt that regardless of whether you agreed or disagreed, there were people that were thinking things through and that were doing their best to try to make decisions that were in the best interest of the country, whether you agree with them or not. There was a calmness to the way they proceeded. There was a lack of chaos. There was respect for people. And since then, it's slowly, slowly slid away. And now we're at sort of the extreme end with Donald Trump.
Well, it's sort of the art of decorum. And I think that's something that has not only crumbled in the political sphere, but also I think in the social sphere. I think there is no instruction or emphasis of practicing social discourse. I think now you might see a little bit of a shift starting to happen with younger generations, thank God. But I think going back to what we've been talking about with social media, I think because there aren't any filters, because everyone can kind of develop their ideas in echo chambers or fear without fear of repercussion, unless there's like social media policing, that
There are repercussions. We have seen people, I'm sure you have friends on social media who have gone off the deep end on one end of the political spectrum or another.
And then people jump in. Yeah.
People say, well, we're out of here. You're no longer our friend after all these years.
Yeah. But I think, you know, it does become a trouble, too, when you don't have the tools to exercise that, or the other side doesn't just listen when it comes to places that matter, whether it's the workplace. You know, we were briefly talked about the decorum or lack thereof in the Kavanaugh trials, where, you know, both sides felt like it was a witch hunt. You know, what do you do? Who's preserving and protecting those kind of civil liberties?
Yeah, the social media world has made it easier to hold elected officials accountable, even to hold presidents accountable. So that's a good thing. But at the same time, it's allowed so many other voices to enter in, and it's allowed chaos to ensue in such a way that it's difficult to bring order to it. Mm-hmm. And it's probably difficult for any president or any political leader to bring order to it. Mm-hmm. But this president in particular seems to thrive on the chaos and uses it. I think what he thinks is to his advantage by leveraging the chaos to create more chaos. But to me, to have someone with a calm, steady hand like H.W. Bush in charge right now, regardless of, you know, how I feel about his policies, would be so much better for our economy, so much better for our relationships with global partners. And I hope that we can get back to that in the near future with a new president. Mm-hmm.
Terry, when were you out of the New York State Senate?
I was out on the 1st of January 2015.
Okay, so you were in there well into the social media age. Did you use that a lot?
Yeah, we did.
We did. That means your team did. Did
well,
you?
Well, yeah, it was we. I mean, yeah, it was, you know, you theoretically, you know, take your job very seriously, and you're doing a lot of work beyond just sitting around playing on Twitter and Facebook all day long. So
now, when you run again, will you be using that again?
Yeah. So
aha.
I'm sorry.
Thank you very much.
What was the question?
I said, when you run again, will you be using it more?
Oh, I misunderstood the question. I'm sorry. I thought you said when I was running, was I using it again?
Yeah.
Well, if I was to run for anything, yes, certainly social media would be a part of it. But I'm not running for anything right now.
We got him.
Sorry.
Roll the tape back, Ian. No, we got it on the news.
But I mean, it is a key communication device today, and it also allows people to communicate with you. And it also requires more time of both yourself and your staff to monitor those communication systems, which is challenging when you're working with a limited staff.
Well, speaking of communications, while we were talking, I was just kind of checking in on our news, because you can do that now with a handy-dandy tool like this in your pocket.
Cut that out. Focus on the show.
But because I know Alan is out there listening, and I know he's written about this, apparently Deval Patrick will make an announcement, according to sources close to and familiar with him, that he will not be running for president in 2020. Much to Alan's dismay, apparently.
But not to, I think some people will not be surprised by that announcement is coming down.
I know Alan's disappointed, and I'm disappointed too. I kind of think it's just a little early for anyone just to step out, especially someone of his magnitude with his substantial leadership skills and experience. It's unfortunate.
However, you step out this early, you always have time to step back.
Well, you can always, you never know what's going to happen. But I would prefer to have as many choices as possible right now, this early out, and give it a little more time to see what happens.
I think that will be, you know, what is the interesting thing that will happen over the next, you know, 18 months or so, to kind of really see how that list gets whittled down. And I think that's the struggle with, I think, the Democratic Party right now, and with what's happening in terms of the proliferation of values and characteristics. I think some people got voted into office because they brought what were seen as new thoughts or new ideals, maybe leaning towards the more progressive side. And then some folks are more of the traditional line. And I think how will those, not only conversations, but how will those actions inform legislating, the process of legislating in the next year or so, will be really interesting, and whether that will kind of weed out different candidates. What do you think, Terry?
Well, I think the Democratic Party is riding as high as it has in a very long time. It is at a very high mark because of the last election results. But I also think that in state legislatures and in Congress in Washington, even here in Albany, the leaders of the Democratic Party are really under enormous pressure to deliver. And not only on legislation, but also to deliver a presidential candidate that can beat Donald Trump. That is probably the height of the pressure we're under.
Now, I'm interested in asking you, following up with you, Terry, you say the Democratic Party's riding as high as they have in a while.
Yeah, well,
yes. I mean, these midterm results sort of kind of by the book. In other words, the incumbent president will lose an X number of seats every time in a midterm election. I mean, can we read too much into this?
No, I don't think so. I think, you know, we had until, a few weeks ago, we had a country that was almost predominantly governed by Republicans at every level of government, including state legislatures. This election has changed that dynamic to some degree and given Democrats back a substantial amount of power at all levels of government. And so I do think it's historic, and I think the numbers show that, and I think the wins show that. But it could easily be lost 2 years from now. And I think the Democrats at all levels have a real challenge is to maintain that control, to show that they're capable of using it, to show that they can use that power responsibly. And I think who we ultimately put up as the nominee for the Democratic presidential slot is going to be key to proving that.
He's running again, isn't he, Michelle?
I do not believe that's the case.
No, you don't believe so? So, Michelle Gibson, have you enjoyed yourself today here on the show?
I have. It's been actually a little difficult holding back.
Well, you should
jump in, Michelle.
Your mic has been on the entire
well,
time.
Yes, but
Michelle, you should have the last
word.
I'm
just going to say one thing.
Okay,
if we remember a few years ago, with all of the Republican candidates for president, Trump is the one we ended up with. So I think we have to be careful with what the Democrats do to just to get a superlative candidate that everybody gets behind, and we're not unhappy about it later.
Well, you know, that's a good spot to end the program. So you weren't in a lot, but you got the last word. Well done.
I like a little zinger.
Thanks, Michelle, for coming. Thanks to Berkshire Eagle reporter Jen Smith, former New York State Senator Terry Gibson, and Alan Shartok, who is now on the way. He's heading to an undisclosed location. It's the Roundtable on WMC. And remember, coming up at 11, we will have the state funeral for George H.W. Bush live from NPR. But we'll be back with more Roundtable in a moment.